You know, it's not very often that we are watching an episode of Dynamite and we have a main event that looks like it was ripped out right from one of our Be the Booker segments at the end of these streams. Right? Didn't it feel like that tonight? We got a Be the Booker main event on Dynamite. We had Adam Copeland one-on-one for the first time and probably the only time ever against Minoru Suzuki. And the way this all came about, he went to Tony Khan and said, "Hey, do you think we could get Suzuki?" And it was that simple, and Tony Khan said, "I don't know, let me make a phone call." And as soon as he got the call back and he got the okay, he went and made the announcement without even telling Adam Copeland. It was John Moxley who came over to Copeland in the locker room last week and said, "Hey, you're working with Suzuki next week." And Copeland got all excited. He was marking out because he's been doing the Cope Open. Adam Copeland is in the middle of doing an open challenge as he tries to climb the ladder back into contention for Christian Cage and the TNT Championship. And so he wanted Minoru Suzuki and he got him. And we had the two veterans in the ring beating the hell out of each other. Suzuki, look, I believe Copeland when he said at the end of his match tonight that he has never been hit so hard in his entire life. I believe it. Two of them had a very enjoyable main event, and even better, it was commercial free. So there were no interruptions during tonight's main event. I love the randomness of it. Like, it fits into the story of the open challenge, but yet the match itself was just so random. And it's just one of those matches that if you would have told me even 6 months ago when he was still in WWE, let alone four or five years ago when he was still retired, that one day we would see Adam Copeland against Minoru Suzuki, I would have said, put down the pipe. But here we are. Samoa Joe, the AEW World Champion, has multiple challengers coming after him. Two of those potential challengers were in action on the show tonight, Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland, Wardlow as well. But really, the focus tonight was on Hangman and Swerve. Swerve got into the ring for a one-on-one match against Jeff Hardy. I could not even tell you the last time that Jeff Hardy was on Dynamite. It has been a while. Been some controversy around how frustrated the two of them are. Is it more of a storyline? Is it more reality being blended over into a storyline? The Hardys have been very upset that they have not been featured on Dynamite. Well, Jeff Hardy had his moment tonight, and he had the right opponent because that was the best match that Jeff Hardy has had his entire career so far in AEW. I have not seen a Jeff Hardy match that good in years. And credit to both of them. I'm not going to just give all the credit to Swerve, but Jeff Hardy had the right opponent tonight because Swerve has been on a roll. He's been on fire. Everything he touches turns to gold. No matter who you put him in the ring with, whether it's Hangman Page, all the people he wrestled in the Continental Classic, it doesn't matter. Swerve right now is firing on all cylinders, bell to bell. Jeff Hardy was the beneficiary of that tonight, but he stepped up. He stepped up and put in the performance that he needed to put in. Now, whether or not that's going to equal more appearances for him on this show, I don't know. It may be a situation where he is in the process of earning that trust. Because the last time Tony Khan tried to do something with him, he got burned. And so Jeff Hardy went out there tonight, and maybe in his head he had it like, look, I need to go out there and have the match of my life. The best match at this stage in my career that I could possibly have, because I want more of this. I want to make more appearances. I want more matches on this show. Whether he earned it or not, I don't know. But he and Swerve had a very good match tonight. We also have some clarity on the situation involving Sting and Darby Allin, and that little line last week during the promo package where Darby Allin said that he and Sting are going to be the AEW World Tag Team Champions. And we had tonight a promo that led to a challenge being accepted by the tag team champions. And so in 2 weeks, they're going to be in Phoenix, Arizona on Dynamite. It will be Big Bill and Ricky Starks defending the AEW World Tag Team titles against Sting and Darby Allin. They are not waiting until Revolution. We are not doing a three-way, at least not yet, at Revolution. They're doing the match in 2 weeks. We'll talk about that and what that could mean as far as the Young Bucks are concerned. But they were in Savannah, Georgia tonight in a venue that last I checked had about 2,000 tickets sold. And the last time they were in this venue in Savannah, they had almost double. They had closer to 4,000 than 2,000. And you could tell just by listening to that crowd tonight. This was not a very enthusiastic crowd for this show. No life, no energy. And you watch these episodes of Dynamite, and if you watch consistently, as I do, and I'm here with you every week watching these shows, you know that a hot crowd that is invested in what they are seeing can really make a huge difference in a show. Just the atmosphere. You know, they were back at Daly's place only a few weeks ago, right? Great atmosphere there. More people, too, but great atmosphere. We didn't get that tonight. It felt like a very dead show. And it was not a bad show. I didn't think it was as good as last week, but it was a good show. A good show with a bad crowd that, for whatever reason, maybe it's just that there were so many empty seats in the building. I don't know what the capacity of the building is. The acoustics and the sound did sound a little weird, especially at the beginning of the night when they first went on the air. But whatever that life is that normally these shows would have, it wasn't in Savannah tonight. I can tell you that. This is your AEW Dynamite review for January 24th, 2024. I am Solomonster. Like and subscribe if you are not already a subscriber to this channel. In fact, if you subscribe, you might just see your name pop up there on the bottom of the screen. So I thank you for that. 400 likes is the minimum to do our Be the Booker segment. Hey, you never know, right? It's all random. Maybe we'll land on Adam Copeland and Minoru Suzuki tonight. Who knows? They're in Be the Booker, right? The spinning wheel, they're in there. So if we hit 400 likes, we will do Be the Booker. Super chats are open as well. If you would like to support the channel, support the stream, you can certainly do so. They'll be popping up on screen as well. And we'll hang out a little bit later and go through your questions. It's been a very busy 48 hours, more so yesterday than today. And so if you missed it, I did record a late sound off yesterday, episode 845. I just did 844 on Sunday. So Tuesday night, I recorded 845, covering the Raw to Netflix story, all the ins and outs, over 30 minutes on that. Talked about The Rock joining the board of TKO, The Rock appearing on ESPN First Take to talk about Roman Reigns. Talked about Kevin Patrick being out on SmackDown, talked about Okada. Again, if you missed it, because it did go up late, that is up right now. So go ahead, if you are subscribed on the audio feed, and check that out. Dynamite opened with the AEW World Champion Samoa Joe, the king himself, coming out in a suit on his way down to the ring as the announcers talked about how Hook pushed him to the limit in last week's main event, which was a very good main event on Dynamite last week. Joe told the crowd that he stands before them the undeniable AEW World Champion. No longer will opportunities be given. Alexander. There you go, Alexander. Just subscribe to the channel. I see you, brother. No longer will title opportunities be given. Instead, they will be earned. And Joe said that anybody who earns a title match against him will suffer the same fate as Hook, choked unconscious, and everything taken from them. Hook's music interrupted, and we got the Hook signal up on the roof. He walked down to the ring with a mic in his hand, which is very unusual because we don't hear very often from Hook. We hear from him a little more often now than we did in the beginning, but he's not a big talker. He wasn't a big talker tonight either. He came down, he said, last week, you won, I lost. Very good. He shook Joe's hand, and then he leaned in and he said, I don't know when, I don't know where, but I will see you again. And Joe told him, I bet you will. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got to survey the field as he looks at his prospective challengers. And he said, security, told security to get in the ring to get the unworthy out of his ring. The unworthy, he says. Joe left the ring. Security swarmed Hook in the ring and he took each of them out with suplexes, and he took one of them out with red rum. This fell very flat. The crowd was flat for a lot of things on the show tonight. The crowd was flat. The segment just came off as very paint-by-number stuff. Nobody really seemed to care much about that part. But that was how they followed up Hook's appearance from last week and his loss to Samoa Joe. All I can say is, it's better than not showcasing him at all, which I fully expected. I was expecting Tony Khan to leave Hook off the show completely. When I looked at the lineup for the show tonight, I mean, they had about 9 different things listed. This person will speak, this person will speak. This, you know, trios match and a bunch of singles matches. It was a loaded lineup, and I didn't see Hook's name anywhere. So at least they got him on the show, and he came down to the ring, and he delivered a missive to Samoa Joe and said, again, I don't know where or when, but this will not be the last that you see me or hear from me. And then he put a bunch of people down, and he walked out. Not the most exciting thing in the world, but at least they found something for him to do. But the key is now Tony Khan has to find something for Hook to do every week. It can't just be that he came out here tonight and said, one day you and I are going to do this again, and then he vanishes, and we don't see him on Dynamite doing anything meaningful for the next 3 months. If the goal is that he has to work his way back up, even if they don't do it anytime in the near future, which I don't expect them to, but he's got to get in the hunt, and it doesn't matter who he works with. You can pluck anybody from the roster. Go to AEW.com or AEWWrestling.com, whatever the URL is. Go there and look at the roster, and they have a gigantic roster, okay? Just the men's roster alone. And go scan through every name on there. You can blindfold yourself and pluck a name out, all right? And hopefully you don't land on Tony Schiavone or something like that. It doesn't matter, whoever it is. Just get him involved in something meaningful. Get him involved in a story. Get him involved in a program with somebody where he can begin to rack up wins. But it can't just be the obligatory send Hook out there and do the Wardlow thing where he racks up wins and he leaves. You're at a point now, this guy is very green. Still very young, very inexperienced. He's got a, you know, the way he carries himself, you know, he's got that swagger about him. But at the end of the day, he's still someone who's very, as they say, wet behind the ears, and he needs experience. He needs to be doing more. He needs to be talking more. The little doses that we get of him talking, I mean, that's fine in little micro bites, but I wouldn't say he's a great promo. So he's got to just continue to work on those things. The only way you're going to do that is by getting him on TV so people don't forget about him. And I'm not talking about taping matches for Rampage. So that's on Tony Khan going forward. That's one of his challenges. He has to find something for Hook to do so that what we saw last week with Samoa Joe let him kick out of a muscle buster at one. One. Don't squander that. Take this kid and do something with him. So Hook left, and Joe took a seat at the announce desk for the opening match between Hangman Adam Page and Penta El Cerro Miedo. Joe asked, who raised that animal in the ring? He was talking about Hook. And Taz chuckled, and he told him, you know who raised him. So after a break, Penta wanted a double stomp, rolled through into a Death Valley driver by Hangman. After some punches in the corner, Hangman bit him on the head. Penta fired back, hit a spinning Death Valley driver of his own, and he wanted to snap the arm, and Hangman fought it off. He hit a sit-out Liger Bomb. Both men fought to the apron. Hangman avoided a Fear Factor. Penta avoided a Deadeye, and Hangman sent Penta back inside. He tried for the Buckshot Lariat, but Penta countered into the Made in Japan for a 3-count. That's right. I'm calling it a 3-count, even though it was not counted as a 3-count, because it was a 3-count. I will dispute that. Because not only was it close, it was damn close. They only called it a 2.5 count. I honestly, Made in Japan should be his finish. I mean, it looks very similar to the JML driver, but the Made in Japan, if you're going to use that in a match, that should be the finish. And I know we see this a lot in wrestling these days. We look at a move and say, how could that not be the finish? How could a destroyer not be a finish? You're spiking somebody on top of their head. But that ship has sailed. It's like the DDT at this point. You know, the destroyer is what it is. The code red, you're never going to get that back. But something like Made in Japan, I think, would be a perfectly fine finish for him to use on a regular basis. So So Penta wanted a springing destroyer on the apron. Page, though, reversed into a deadeye. He followed that with an Orihara moonsault to the floor. Back inside, Hangman got the slingshot in for the buckshot, but Penta ducked it. And so Hangman said, the hell with that. He just delivered a normal lariat, and he took him down, ran right back out onto the apron. He tried again, and this time he hit the buckshot, and Hangman picked up the three. The first half of this was fine. The final few minutes of this, though, was really good. I thought the second half of this match was better than the first half. And Hangman improves now to 3-0 for the year so far in singles matches, and that brings him one step closer to an AEW championship match. Although on commentary, Samoa Joe said that he doesn't think Hangman still is championship worthy. And Hangman looked down at him from the ring. He shouted that that title was coming to him. And obviously they are building to what appears to be a three-way at Revolution with him and Swerve and Samoa Joe. But you, and with that knowledge in mind, you knew that Penta wasn't winning this match. I got a mailbag question a couple weeks ago from somebody saying, do I think that one day Penta could be a main eventer in AEW? I like Penta. I have liked Penta since I first started watching him on Lucha Underground. I think he's great. The answer is no. Penta is not going to be a main eventer in AEW. Penta is in a certain spot on the show, and I don't see that changing. Could he be a main eventer if he had been pushed differently, if they went a darker route with the character? Yeah, he could be. I'm not saying he doesn't have the ability to do it, but is he going to be a main event player in AEW? No, he's not. And they use him a lot in situations like this to lose to other people. So with his brother being out, they're not doing any Lucha Bros matches. They're kind of just buying time until Phoenix is ready to come back. But that's the role for Penta on this show. Now backstage, Renee was with Orange Cassidy and asked him about Roderick Strong wanting him at Revolution in a match for the international title. Cassidy said that's fine. He'll wrestle Roddy at Revolution on March 3rd. He's not sure why he has to wait another 5 weeks or 6 weeks, whatever it is. I think 5 weeks to wrestle him. But in the meantime, that doesn't mean he's not going to wrestle. And he said he went to Tony Khan and asked him to get some of his friends and some of his enemies together, his friends and enemies. And the winner of a match involving all of these individuals will then go on to challenge him on Saturday on Collision for the international title. And we did learn later on in the show it is going to be what they are calling a freshly squeezed four-way with Kip Sabian, Commander, The Butcher, and Vikingo. Now, I'm sure that there is history with all of these men and Orange Cassidy, like I know there is with him and Kip Sabian, for example, and they'll say, well, these are all friends and enemies of his. And so that's exactly what he said in the promo. Still, you know, they throw the graphic up for it, and I'm looking at him like, okay, there's The Butcher and Kip Sabian. And it just feels like, okay, you know, they took these four guys and they just threw them in a match. You know, and now we'll get an international title match on Saturday. They're going to try. Because Saturday, there's another event happening on Saturday. I forgot what it's called. The Royal something? The Rumble is on Saturday. Collision is on Saturday. They have to try. They don't have any control over the schedule. They're contractually obligated to do this show. Unless there's a sports preemption, they don't have any say in the matter. They have a television show that they have to book for Saturday. It's not an ideal situation because the Royal Rumble, I feel like even for casual fans, might be the one show, other than maybe WrestleMania. The Royal Rumble is probably that one show a year where even if you don't really watch much WWE these days, or you don't watch it consistently, you want to tune in and see the Royal Rumble. So there's going to be a lot of interest in this pay-per-view this weekend, and they're going to go head-to-head. Again, they're going to try, though. They're going to try. They're not only doing an international title match, they have added Bryan Danielson against Yuji Nagata. Talking about random matches. And they're doing an Escape the Cage Elimination Trios match with FTR and Daniel Garcia against the House of Black, which sounds like an awesome match. Too bad I'm not going to see it. But they're trying to load up the show on Saturday, and they're going to do whatever they do. I don't think they're going to do very well, but there you go. Coming out of a break, the Young Bucks were walking through the hallway backstage. The stagehand handed them a format sheet. They were looking it over with approval, like they're the ones running the show. Alex Marvez approached them for comment. Nick said that Marvez should show them more respect by calling them by their passport names of Nicholas and Matthew Jackson. Matt said that they are the two surviving EVPs. He also said the backstage morale is through the roof, and they took credit for the improved catering situation. They asked Marvez, catering. Catering's better now than it used to be. So then Dante and Darius Martin, Top Flight, they walk by. They're in their street clothes, and the Bucks accuse them of showing up late. Darius said, we've been here since 1. This was supposed to be hypocritical because the Bucks had just showed up. So they just showed up to the building, and they're criticizing somebody else for being late. That was the idea. Then the Bucks gave them a hard time for not being in their gear, for not having their credentials on them. Dante said, you hired us. Who do we need credentials for? Then the Bucks, they started laughing, they loosened up, and they said that they were just kidding. So their douche gimmick continues, although some people might say it's not a gimmick. It's a lot of people that don't like these two. But they're hamming it up. They're leaning into it. They're going to use it for heat as they go into this match with Sting and Darby Allin at Revolution. Wardlow is out next with the Undisputed Kingdom, including Adam Cole on his crutches in his walking boot, hobbling down to the ring. Where are all those people, by the way, I would like to know, who insisted to me on social media in the lead up to even Full Gear, let alone World's End, that Adam Cole was not really hurt, and they were just playing it up for the big reveal. He'll be the devil, and he'll jump him, and he'll challenge him for the title, but he's not really that hurt. I haven't heard from these people in a while. It's like they disappeared. I don't know where they went. Maybe they're hibernating. I would say it's winter, it gets cold, but it's going to be 50 degrees here in New York tomorrow. It's not that cold here yet. So he was out, Wardlow was, to wrestle Trent Beretta. Wardlow was manhandling him. He wound up for a big lariat. Beretta caught him with a knee strike and sent him out to the floor. Beretta hit a suicide dive that failed to knock Wardlow off his feet. And Trent grabbed a chair. He slammed it across Wardlow's back on the outside of the ring. And you might ask yourself, why was this not a disqualification? Because referee Rick Knox was being distracted on the other side of the ring and did not see it. Because Rick Knox is completely incompetent at his job. And so that's why Trent was able to get away with it. So back in the ring, Beretta went for a top rope crossbody block. Wardlow, though, caught him, power slammed him. Wardlow finished him off with a last ride powerbomb. Trent was just dead weight. He was dead weight up there. He was sandbagging him. He was completely out cold. And Wardlow picks up the win. After the match, Orange Cassidy, Rocky Romero, and Chuck Taylor, they got in the ring to check on Trent, Taven, Bennett, Roddy. They talked Wardlow into leaving the ring. You know, for what is supposed to feel like the new hot heel faction in the Undisputed Kingdom, they haven't been around for very long, but for what's supposed to be the new hot heel group in this company, boy, do they feel cold. Boy, do they feel flat right now. They're trying to rebuild Wardlow. They're having him go out there and kill dudes. Adam Cole is still hurt, so he can't wrestle. You got Roddy. They've already told us that we're basically in, you know, this suspended animation state until Revolution, because he's not challenging for the international title for another 6 weeks. And then there's Taven and Bennett, and there's just not a whole lot going on. I'm not saying they have to be the NWO 2024 and come out and beat everybody up, but it just feels like a cold faction. You know, MJF went away. He's going to be gone for a while. We don't know how long. Cole can't wrestle. He's still hurt, which was always going to be the problem, making him the devil, because he is hurt, and he is not going to be wrestling for a very long time. So they have to take it upon themselves to find ways to keep things interesting. And unfortunately, right now, they're already, only a few weeks in, they're already running into a rut. We're not even at the end of January yet. All these people that seemingly wanted a piece of Adam Cole and wanted a piece of this group, Hangman, right, for what they did to him, they're occupied right now. Hangman, Swerve, they're occupied with Samoa Joe and the AEW World title. And so right now, it's just the Undisputed Kingdom coming out and having Wardlow beat up random people. That's going to get very old very fast if they don't pivot to something specific. They don't pick an issue, pick a fight with somebody soon, somebody with a name. This is going to get old real fast. Renee was out on stage next to introduce Deonna Purrazzo. Tony Storm came out after that. They had a face-to-face on stage, even though they were seated in director's chairs while Renee was in the middle, sort of moderating. Deonna, this is now Tony Storm addressing Deonna Purrazzo. Tony said, Deonna, I believe you were recently body-shamed, which I think is ridiculous because there's so much more to shame about you. Yes, we do have history, but that doesn't mean that you can just waltz in here and use our past friendship to get yourself a title shot. I have had many friends, and all of them less talented than me. Well, that's something me and Tony Storm have in common. You may be the greatest technical wrestler in the world today, but let me make one thing clear. If you step into that ring with me, I will twist your lips so hard you'll need an epidural. I don't know what lips she was referring to. We're talking about Toni Storm here. This woman is unhinged. Some of the things that she says when she's out there on commentary, you have to ask these questions. I don't know exactly, specifically, which set she was talking about, but that's what she said. These questions need to be asked. I'm sorry. So Deonna said, this is insane. I didn't come to AEW to make friends. I came to make money. No. She didn't steal that line from someone. She said, the Bang Bang Scissor Gang? Yeah, that's another one. The Bang Bang Scissor Gang. Yeah, they're pushing that now on TV. Deonna said, I didn't come here to make friends. I came to become the AEW Women's World Champion. It just so happens that the champion used to be my friend, but I have no problem earning a title opportunity and winning arm by arm. She said, you see, this isn't the Toni Storm that I want to wrestle, this delusional sham. I don't want to wrestle that Toni Storm. I want the Toni Storm that lived on dojo floors with me. I want the Toni Storm who moved to America and lived in my house. I want the Toni Storm that was arguably one of the best in the world. And that Toni Storm is the one that I want to beat for that AEW Women's World title. So I'm begging you, dig down deep and find that version of yourself. And if you need any further reminder, she said, take a look at your ankle. Because I'm sure as hell sure that it looks a lot like mine. And this is what we saw. Top image you see there, clearly in black and white, that's Toni Storm's leg. And on the bottom is Deonna Purrazzo's ankle. She revealed a tattoo that matches the same one on Toni Storm's ankle. Identical tattoos. Now, it's hard, unless you're really strained to look. It can be hard to look at what it is. I'll be honest with you, when they first flashed on screen the image of her ankle, I thought, at just the first glance, I thought they were, like, Asian characters, like in an Asian language, like in a foreign language. And I'm looking, I'm like, wait, those are not letters. They're ducks. They're ducks. If you want to know the story behind this, because I was curious, Deonna Purrazzo did an interview a few years ago, about 4 years ago, with Sports Kita. And the story behind it is very simple. It's not really very sensational. She and Tony did the Download Festival, and in the VIP section, they had a free tattoo booth. And they went in there, and they said, oh, you know, we'll get tattooed, So let's see what we want to get. But they couldn't draw things because I guess there were just so many people there. They couldn't take the time to just sit down and draw whatever they wanted. So they had a board. And on the board, they had all these generic tattoos. And so on both ankles, what you are looking at there, each one has a drunk duck that is holding a beer. And again, it's hard to see, but as tattoos go, you know what? That might actually be better than the American Nightmare one on Cody's neck. A drunk duck with a beer in its hand. It's not bad. Maybe I should get one of those. You know, I'm flying out to Tampa in the morning. I probably shouldn't be doing this stream right now. I'm flying out early in the morning. Later in the morning. I won't get in until the afternoon, but I'm going to Florida, and so maybe what I'll do when I'll land is I'll find a tattoo shop. And I wonder if I went in there and I said to the guy, look, I want to get a drunk duck holding a beer. Maybe not even a beer. Like, give me a drunk duck holding a can of, like, Woo Energy. How would that, what do you think that would look like right here? Like this part of my neck. Like Cody, like in this area here. A drunk duck with a can of Woo Energy in its hand. What do you think about that? Get it? Really? All right. We'll see. Tony said, you know what, Deanna? You could take your little tattoo, that's what she called it, and you could blow it out of your bum hole. And then she threw her shoe at her. And so Deanna took her shoe off, and Deanna threw her shoe at Tony. Or at least she tried to. I think she actually hit Luther with it because it completely missed Tony Storm. So then Deanna tried to take her down for the arm bar. Mariah May ran over to pull Tony to safety. And when Deanna threw a pump kick at Mariah, Mariah ducked out of the way and she hit Luther with the kick instead. So Mariah and Tony, they fled to the back. That left Deanna to pose with the AEW Women's World title. And then she threw the belt down. Luther picked it up and he took the belt to the back. So that was the segment. Deanna Purrazzo is trying to rack up some wins as she prepares to challenge Toni Storm for the Women's World title. That's going to be a Revolution match. We still have 5 weeks to go until Revolution, so plenty of time for her to rack up wins, but I am still very much enjoying the Toni Storm antics on these shows. Still one of my favorite parts. We need a channel member emoji for that duck. Is there no duck emoji already? There should be. They have they have emojis for everything else. They have a mouse emoji. They have spiders, bugs, Godzilla. John Moxley was in the back for a promo. He said the Blackpool Combat Club has won a lot of matches and titles since forming, but the number of victory parties they have had is basically zero. Since they don't spend time patting each other on the back because they're always looking out for threats that are around every corner. That's what it takes to be the best, to be elite, something that some people who come to AEW have failed to realize. In 2024, he's going to pulverize and torture anybody who can't get with the program and keep up with him in the ring. He said this Friday night, he'll cut his own heart out and bleed. Of course he will. What else is new? I'd be surprised if he said, I'm not going to bleed. He said he'll cut his heart out and he'll bleed if he has to for the fans that pay to see the best wrestling in the world. And he said that he'll do it every single time. And then we were told that Moxley is going to wrestle Lee Moriarty on Rampage. So, whatever for the match, but the promo was pretty good. Mox is always good on these. We also had a very quick backstage promo with Johnny TV, who I swear to God, I keep forgetting he's employed by this company, John Morrison, and Taya Valkyrie. And Taya said, allow us to reintroduce ourselves. The most TV-ready couple in AEW. Taya said that she's pissed off that Deanna Purrazzo was trying to cut to the front of the line. Johnny said, no butts, no cuts, no coconuts. This is the first time that we've seen Johnny TV on Dynamite in ages. And he says, no butts, no cuts, no coconuts. I suspect this will be the last time that we see Johnny TV on Dynamite for a very long time. Taya said that she was challenging Perrazzo to a match next week on Dynamite. I guess his only hope is going to be being in her corner. Otherwise, we ain't going to see him on this show again for a while. He fulfilled his quota with that line here on this show. Now we can wait 6 months before we see him again.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You've heard the expression, new year, new me. Every new year, it's the same thing. New year, new me. New year, new me. What if I don't want a new me? What if I like the me the way that I am? People tend to become obsessed with changing themselves instead of just expanding on what they're already doing right. I'm finally hitting the gym 4 times a week. I'm finally getting around to some cleaning projects I've been putting off. Therapy is something that can help you find your strengths and build on them so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that you'll actually stick to. There's a lot of positives to therapy, and BetterHelp can help get you where you want to go. Therapy has loads of positive benefits. It can help you talk through certain problems you may be having, because sometimes you just need someone to talk to. Or it can teach you things you didn't know about, as far as ways to cope with the stress in your life, or maybe eliminate stress altogether. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's based entirely online, and it's designed to be flexible to fit into your schedule. To get started, all you need to do is fill out a short questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster.
Swerve Strickland against Jeff Hardy, who came out with his brother, and he went to go do the Jeff Hardy pose that he does, but then he stopped himself, and he thought about it, and instead he did the Matt Hardy delete pose. They've been working an angle where Jeff Hardy, and really both Hardys, have fallen on hard times, and they're trying to work their way back up to Dynamite on Wednesdays, and they have voiced their frustration on television. They have voiced their frustration on social media with not being utilized better, not, you know, making appearances on Dynamite. How much of that is storyline? How much of that is real life? Bleeding over onto television. I'm going to say the latter. They're turning it into an angle. But there's not a doubt in my mind there is legitimate frustration there on the part of both Matt and Jeff Hardy that Tony Khan is not doing more with them. They go out, they do signings probably, they go to events, they get to the buildings, the fans see them, the fans still go crazy probably when they see, oh, Jeff Hardy, right? They go nuts for these guys. And in their minds, they're thinking, well, our names still have value. And they do. That's why Tony Khan signed the Hardys. That's why Tony Khan signed Jeff Hardy, because he wanted to reunite the Hardys. And he wanted them to become AEW World Tag Team Champions. I'm sure that was the plan from day one when Jeff signed with the company. And they likely would have already become AEW World Tag Team Champions were Jeff not in a position 3 months in to completely fuck it all up. And so Tony Khan did not fire him, but he did say that he's got to go do what he has to do, rehab, whatever, get himself back in working condition, clear his head, do what he has to do, and then he'll bring him back to AEW, which is what he has done. But Tony Khan has been rightfully hesitant to do anything meaningful with them on television. They might be on Rampage, they're on Collision. Rampage has basically become the Hardy show for months. I don't blame Tony Khan at all. That's one thing that you cannot blame Tony Khan for. I don't blame him for not wanting to put the Hardys or Jeff Hardy specifically back on television every single week, or put him, come up with some kind of a story, an ongoing long-term story for them, because that trust was broken. Will the day come that they get that tag team title run, they get that big tag team title win? My guess is yes. I don't think Tony Khan is going to let them go or let their contracts expire without attempting to do what he originally wanted to do, which is to get the belts on them so that when they retire and they're done, they can say that they were the WWE Tag Team Champions, they were the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, they were the WCW Tag Team Champions, because I believe they held those two after they folded WCW into WWE, so that really doesn't count, but whatever. That's like saying, Kurt Angle, right? Kurt Angle won the WCW title, I think, on SmackDown for a week or something like that. Like, who looks back at Kurt Angle and says that this guy is a former WCW world champion? Give me a fucking break. But the Hardys won all these titles. And so I'm sure Tony Khan wants to be able to say they were also tag team champions in my company. Maybe one day. But if he's hesitant to do anything with Jeff Hardy on this show, I got no issue with that. I'd be hesitant too. And if tonight was any kind of an audition for Jeff Hardy, I think he did very well. Because Jeff Hardy went out there tonight, and I think he had his working shoes on, and he knew how important this match was. Could not have asked for a better opponent. We got dueling chants to start. Swerve was caught off guard by Jeff's attempts to cheat at the beginning, and then he drove Hardy down with a backbreaker. He wanted to snap the arm, but Matt ran distraction that allowed his brother to regain control. Both men fought out to the floor. Swerve went back to the apron. He got tripped up by Jeff, and Swerve took this nasty-looking bump. Not only on his head, but like his neck sort of bent on the way down. He was like overselling it, but it looked like he almost broke his neck. He ended up outside the ring up against the barricade. The steps had been pulled out a little bit. Jeff backed up, built up a head of steam. He charged forward. He jumped off the ring steps, did a whisper in the wind. Or not whisper in the wind. I guess it would have been poetry in motion. Into Swerve against the barricade. Jeff went over the barricade. Swerve was supposed to go over the barricade, but he didn't make it. And so he just sort of dangled over the barricade. And that took us into a picture-in-picture break. Both men fought on the ropes coming out of the break. Jeff knocked Swerve off and then hit him with a whisper in the wind. He then went to the middle rope. Swerve, though, shoved him onto the apron and then ran him into the ring post. And Swerve stood on the ring steps that had been pulled away from the post. He pulled Jeff up there with him. Jeff countered whatever Swerve was attempting to do. And he put him down with a twist of fate on the ring steps. And that got a reaction from the crowd. One of the few times all night that the crowd genuinely reacted big to something was that spot on the steps. Jeff threw Swerve back inside. He tried for the Swanton Bomb. Swerve, though, avoided it. And Swerve hit Jeff with a house call kick, covered him, only got a two count. Jeff rallied, got a couple of pin attempts, and then he hit three jawbreakers before Swerve put him down with a flatliner. He went up top, he hit the Swerve stomp, and he picked up the win. As soon as Hangman won his match against Penta earlier in the show, you knew that Swerve was beating Jeff Hardy. I mean, you knew even before the show went on the air tonight that Swerve was beating Jeff Hardy. But especially after Hangman got his win at the beginning of the show. And Swerve, I'm going to start calling him the Magic Man. He worked his magic tonight. He went in there and he brought Jeff Hardy to the best match that he has had his entire career so far in AEW. And credit to both men. Swerve is great. Jeff Hardy, obviously he knew tonight was a very important night for him. Because maybe, just maybe, if he goes out there and he can steal the show, if he goes out there and has a really great match with Swerve, maybe he'll get another. And then another, and another, and maybe now the Hardys can start to build some momentum. So for him, you know, for Swerve, it's just another win. For Jeff Hardy, though, I think, you know, pull the curtain back, I think that this was a much bigger win for him, even though he lost. It was a bigger win because he went out there and he killed it. Now, he definitely, look, he's moving slower. That's just the product of age, and it's the product of what he's done to his body over the years. You know, Matt and Jeff, they're not moving around like they used to. But he was moving around better than I've seen him in a very long time. This was a very good match. I don't know, again, if it's going to be enough to get him back on Dynamite on a weekly basis, but if this was an audition, if he was coming in to try out for a part, I think he may have landed the part. So backstage, Renee attempted to interview Hangman and noted that he is 3-0 so far this year. She said the rankings will be released at the end of the month. So let's talk briefly about this. I addressed this on the podcast. That was exclusive to the podcast. I didn't put anything up on the channel. Little things like that are on the podcast, so you got to listen to the full show. But Tony Khan is bringing the rankings back. The rankings that they abandoned 2 years ago by simply not updating the website. In fact, still people who still have the link to the page, when you go back there, because I guess it's still active, they may have taken the link off the main page, but it still listed the last rankings, which had Swerve and Our Glory as the reigning AEW World Tag Team Champions. That's how far back these rankings go when they just stopped using them and they stopped acknowledging them. Why did they do that? Because they were getting in the way of what Tony Khan wanted to do. There were certain matches he wanted to make. There were certain people he wanted to push. It was getting in the way of creatively what he wanted to do. It was no longer convenient for him. So they stopped using the rankings. Now they're going to go back to the rankings. And this is a product of coming out of the Continental Classic, wanting to incorporate more sports-like elements back into the show. And I also think that Jinder Mahal and that whole thing just broke his brain. And that whole debacle on Twitter, when Jinder Mahal suddenly was challenging for the world championship and Tony Khan went haywire because in his mind, where's all the rage? Because I saw outrage over Hook being named challenger to Samoa Joe. There was no outrage. Not at the level that he was making it out to be. There was no outrage. It was only in his head. But that whole thing blew up. So I think it broke his brain, and now he's like, we got to bring the rankings back. We're gonna show them. We're going to do it the right way. We're gonna go back to our roots. And I used to endorse the idea of the rankings. I don't think it's a bad idea in theory to try to have some sort of ranking system to explain why certain people are getting title matches, incorporate them into the storylines, and say, man, this guy is only ranked number 5, and he's trying, you know, he's trying to work his way up. Look at what they're doing with Adam Copeland right now. He has this open challenge every single week. He wants a TNT title shot. If they had rankings specific to the TNT title, like let's say a top 5, the way that I used to pitch it when I was still gung-ho about this idea, until they tried it and it fucking failed. The way that I used to pitch it was you have a top 10 for your 2 world titles. Or your men's world title, your women's world title, you know, in a world where there used to be just one of each. Now there's 15 of each. But you have a top 10 for that. And then for your secondary titles, Intercontinental, US, TNT, TBS, you do a top 5. So you could break it down by championship like that. And I think that there's a way to make that work. This is not going to work. I don't know how long before they abandon it again, but they will abandon it again. So I can't get excited for this because the same exact thing is going to happen. When it becomes inconvenient to follow the rankings, they're simply going to ignore them. Or because, well, the rankings reflect that this guy is all the way down here. We want to push that guy, so then we'll find a way to circumvent it. Have some kind of a match, and you can leapfrog into a spot higher on the list. It's only a matter of time. These rankings are not going to be around long term. They will end up back where they were before, and then maybe years after that, they'll dust them off and try it again. So I'm sorry, I can't get excited about any of this because it's going to go exactly the way that it did. Swerve and Prince Nana showed up, though, to interrupt Hangman before he could really say anything. And Swerve pointed out that he is unbeaten this year, and he asked Hangman, who was the last person to beat him? And Hangman said, he said something that I might start quoting this myself. He yelled at him and said, it's new year, new me, dumbass. Just the way he said it. So Paige had that very witty comeback. Renee informed both of them that they would be in dealer's choice matches next week, where Hangman would get to pick Swerve's opponent, and Swerve would get to pick Hangman's opponent. So that's coming up on Dynamite next week. Thunder Rosa, one-on-one with Red Velvet. Coming out of a break, Rosa fought back and hit double knees in the corner. She followed with a charging low drop kick and a Northern Lights for two. Red Velvet fought back, hit a double stomp. She tried a springing bulldog, but Rosa avoided it and took way too long to try her finish, which allowed Velvet to backdrop out of it. Rosa hit a shotgun drop kick and hit her Tijuana bomb finish for the win. That was her second attempt at doing so. After the match was over, Rosa looked into the camera and said, "When is it my time, Toni Storm?" Or, and as I was waiting for her to say Julia Hart's name, she never did. And she never did because it looked like she forgot her name. So it took forever as she's sitting in the corner and the camera's right there on her and she, I'm waiting for the line and there's no line. It's like this awkward period of time that went by. Until finally, the camera just cut away from her, and they cut to a crowd shot. And you could hear Rosa. She finally spit it out. I didn't hear what she said. She said something in the background. But the camera had already cut away. I don't know if she was doing that on purpose to kind of put down Julia Hart, if that was the idea. I don't think that was the idea. I think she just forgot. But whether it was intentional or not, it just came off very awkward. And so instead, they cut to the crowd, and they had a shot in the front row. You would not believe. Who is it Dynamite tonight? They cut to the front row, and they showed us members of the Savannah Bananas baseball team in the front row. The Savannah Bananas. And I had to look up the logo for this team. And I'm going to put that logo on the screen right now. I'm going to keep it there for a while. This is officially now, from now until the very end, this is now the Savannah Bananas podcast. There it is. That's the real logo, and that is a real team. That's a very angry banana. And not even close to being the worst logo I've ever seen in sports. I love that, actually. The Savannah Bananas. Look, it was good to see Rosa on Dynamite. This was a rare Dynamite appearance for her. It's good just to see her back because she was gone for so long. But this was not great. I didn't think either one of them looked their best here in this match. And Velvet especially. I don't know what was going on with Red Velvet. I was watching her specifically as the match was going on. It almost looked to me, and I don't think she did, but it almost looked to me like, did she hit her head? Did she, you know, get her bell rung or something, because she was moving like in slow motion. So I don't know what was going on with Red Velvet there those last couple of minutes of this match. That did not look good. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Just, I think this is a first time ever match with these two. I don't believe they've worked together before. This was not great, unfortunately. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to introduce Sting and Darby Allin. Darby took the microphone away from Tony. I don't even know why they bother. I mean, I guess they just want him to yell Sting's name. Otherwise, I'm not even sure what the point is to send Schiavone out of his chair to get into the ring for these things. But Tony got into the ring, or he got into the corner and let Darby do his thing. And Darby said whenever he does interviews, he goes out, he does marketing and PR and that kind of stuff, people always ask him, what's it like to team with Sting? Which I totally believe, that they're more interested in asking him about Sting than probably anything about Darby himself. And they also tell him to slow down because he's going to end up retiring before Sting. And then he laughed. He laughed it off. You won't be laughing in 15 years. You won't be laughing then. So he talked about watching Sting suffer what looked to be a career-ending neck injury back in 2015. And he wondered, what if that was me? What if my career was over on an injury like that? I'm shocked it hasn't already happened. You see some of the bumps this guy takes? So then he heard that Sting was coming to AEW. And he wasn't really sure about that because he was of the impression that Sting was not cleared and that he was physically not able to come back. And he asked the heels, you'll remember this. He looked over at Sting and says, you'll remember this. He flew to Sting's house in Texas and they were rolling around in the ring that Sting has down there. And what did he tell Sting? Within 5 minutes, he told Sting, you still got it. And he told him to get back in the ring and finish his career on his own terms. And now look at them. Here they are now, 27-0. They are undefeated. That's a better streak than The Undertaker. And the rankings are back, he said. He thinks that puts them in position to challenge Ricky Starks and Big Bill for those AEW World Tag Team titles. So just like all those years ago in Texas, he's going to look Sting in the eyes and say this one more time, you still got it. And the only difference is I'm not alone this time. I've got all of Savannah to chant, you still got it. Exactly what happened. Fans in Savannah chanted, you still got it at Sting. They also cut briefly to the Young Bucks in the back. I guess they were at the gorilla position. They had headsets on. They were running the show. They were watching on a monitor. I thought they were going to cut Darby's mic, but they didn't do that. They just cut to a shot of the Bucks, and then they cut back to the ring. So he goes, what do you say, Sting? Do you want to end your career as AEW Tag Team Champions? It's all you, man. He handed the microphone to Sting. And Sting said, all right, Savannah, I'm all in. And I said, no, that's Wembley in August. You're retiring in March. It's Revolution. It's Revolution. It's not all in. Anyway. I don't know what was going on with Sting's face paint down by his neck. Anybody else notice this? It was very noticeable to me. I'm looking at Sting because they got a close-up shot of his face. And he has the face paint on. And down by his neck, it looked like he ran out of shaving cream and he used a bottle of motor oil instead. I don't know what was going on there. Good promo from Darby. I don't think Darby gets enough credit for his promos. The thing about Darby when he comes out, not saying he's the best promo in the company. He's not in the top three. He's not Samoa Joe. He's not Joe. He's not MJF. But when he comes out, he's real. Like, I don't listen to a Darby Allin promo and think, man, this sounds manufactured. This sounds forced. It sounds phony. Yeah, almost like he's out there playing a part or something like that. He doesn't believe what he's saying. They send him out to the ring, and it sounds like something that you would expect Darby Allin to say, and he says it with conviction. So, just when we talk about people who are good promos and who are good communicators on these shows, I don't think we mention Darby's name enough, but we should, because I actually think he's very good. Now, after the break, Ricky Starks and Big Bill, just to tie it back into this, they were in the back. Bill thanked them, finally, showing respect to the champions by acknowledging us and mentioning our names. And as far as your challenge goes for a match for the AEW World Tag Team titles, we accept your challenge. And Ricky said it's fitting that Sting started his AEW career against him and a partner of his. Didn't mention who that partner was. But he said that now, of course, he's got the best partner he's ever had, and they're the ones that are going to end Sting. He said Sting is not making it to Revolution, so he may as well lay down so that they can walk over him and Darby Allin. So there it is. Challenge accepted. And we found out a little bit later on in the show that the match is going to happen on Dynamite, their return to Phoenix, in 2 weeks. AEW World Tag Team titles will be on the line. Ricky Starks and Big Bill defending against Sting and Darby. And so now here's the question. We know the Bucks are going to be in the ring with Sting and Darby at Revolution. They have not made it official, but clearly that is the direction that they are building towards. Now, I thought when Darby mentioned that line last week, they would either find a way to get the belts on the Bucks between now and then, Sting and Darby would beat the Bucks, and Sting would get to retire as Tag Team Champion. He and Darby finally get that big title win, right? What a happy way for the fans in Greensboro to see Sting go out. Or maybe they would turn it into a triple threat. I don't really have the appetite for a triple threat. I'd rather it be 2-on-2, 1-on-1. This is different. This could go a couple of different ways. They emphasize the fact that Sting and Darby are unbeaten, 27-0, trying to go 28. Either they win the tag team titles and go to Revolution and defend them, or they lose and get fucked out of a title win. Now, if they beat Ricky Starks and Big Bill, and that's it for Ricky and Bill, and they don't even have a match at Revolution, I mean, I already said it in my predictions at the beginning of the year. I think Ricky, whenever his contract is due, I think he's gone. I don't know how much time he has left. I've heard he might have a lot of time left. Hopefully not, because I'd like to see him at least negotiate himself a better position. But whatever the case may be, Sting and Darby, if they win the tag team titles, they go to Revolution, then I see the Bucks winning. I think Sting is going to put over the Young Bucks, and people's heads are going to explode if that happens. But if they go into that show as the defending tag team champions, then I think the Bucks win. And I've said it before, keep an eye out for Ric Flair, because Ric Flair is going to be there, and we may yet get, if Sting is going out on his back, if he's going to lose, we may yet see one more Ric Flair turn on Sting. I don't want to see it. I don't have any interest in seeing it. It's happened before, and I could see it happening again. That is a very real possibility. And then the Bucks become tag team champions. They get the belts onto them. And then they go on to have their heel run as tag team champions, since it's been a while since they've had the belts. So that's one way for it to go. The other way for it to go would be they're going to do the match in 2 weeks, and they're going to suffer their first loss. And they're going to suffer that first loss at the hands of the Bucks, because the Bucks are the ones who were going to screw them out of a win. Ricky and Big Bill retain. We get Sting and Darby against the Bucks at Revolution, because now there's real heat on the Bucks for costing Sting his first match in AEW. He's no longer undefeated. In that situation, then, I think that they have Sting and Darby go over without the belts on the line. And then Sting can get his revenge, and he gets to go out a winner, and everybody is happy. So I think those are the two scenarios we're looking at here. And if I had to take a guess as to which one it's going to be, I think we're looking at Sting's first loss in 2 weeks. I think the Bucks are going to factor into that finish. But again, it really all boils down to, do they want the belts on the Bucks? If they want the belts on Matt and Nick, they may go the other way. Either way, it's all about getting heat on the Bucks as much as they possibly can going into Greensboro. So when they walk into the arena that night, they're going to have almost 16,000 people in that building. The goal should be, when you get there, if they're going to be the opponents, even if you don't like it, at least try to get as much heat on them as possible. I'm talking like people throwing shit at them. I'm not advocating it, but like I'm thinking those old school heels, and they would come out. You want people so riled up, man, they want to jump the barricade and beat the fuck out of these two guys. Like, that kind of heat. Old school heat in Greensboro when the Young Bucks walk out there. They need to maximize that in some way. Brian Cage, Bishop Kone, and Toa Leona. Gates of Agony, they made their entrance. Jay White, Austin Gunn, Colton Gunn, they walked out onto the stage. They have new music. I noticed it last week for the first time. But they're basically baby faces now, because they're all buddy-buddy with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. Is it a ruse? Are they going to turn on them? Is it going to lead to a trios title match at Revolution? I hope so. I'm not into this whole bang-bang scissor gang stuff. And Jay White being a baby face. Not now. Not now, not yet. It just feels wrong. I'm sorry, it's wrong. Let them lull them into a false sense of security. Lower the boom. They could do a match at Revolution. You unify both sets of six-man titles because you don't need two of them. You only need one. And they wrestle each other. They unify them. You give the win to Bullet Club. And you move them on to something else. On to the next. Hopefully that's where this is headed. But for now, they're all on the same page. And they're all baby faces. Max Caster came out. He rapped on his way to the ring. He told Prince Nana. He told the Nigerian prince to stop sending emails to his mother. trying to scam her. But it was Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed defending the AEW Trios titles against Brian Cage and his torn lat. Still out there wrestling every week with a torn lat. Him and the Gates of Agony. Jay White and the Guns did not come down to the ring with them for this match. Bowens was knocked off the apron heading into a picture-in-picture break. The Embassy controlled throughout the entire break. And Bowens made a comeback. As soon as things came back, he made a comeback. Billy Gunn made the hot tag. He ran wild a little bit there. Toa Leona cut him off from attempting a famouser to Brian Cage. Bowens came right back in. He planted with an F5. Everybody took turns delivering all kinds of big moves. Cone hit a pedigree on Billy for two. Prince Nana threw a chair in the ring. And Aubrey Edwards was distracted by Bishop Cone. Nana then took the referee. Cone wound up. But here comes Switchblade Jay White. He runs back down to the ring. He runs out and all the way down to the ring. And he makes the save. He makes the save for the Acclaimed. And he pulls the chair out of his hands. Gunn hit the one and only on Cone. Nana got carried off by Austin and Colton, I think, from the apron. They basically had him up in a powerbomb position. And they very safely, very gently put him down through a table that was right behind the barricade in the timekeeper's area. And he crashed through the table. So that took care of Prince Nana. Jay White was watching on stage as Cage got dropped from behind by Bowens. And there was a famouser, the arrival, the mic drop elbow. And that gave the Acclaimed the win to retain their titles. So I guess you would say the Bang Bang Scissor Gang was successful here in their first outing as allies. But again, they're heels. Bullet Club are heels. They cannot possibly be roped into this in any kind of long-term way doing all this goofy babyface bullshit. They, when the time is right, will strike. They will turn on them. We will get a unification match. I hope it is a unification match. So I no longer have to see these Ring of Honor six-man titles defended on AEW television. Is it a big deal to me? No, because honestly, I don't give a shit about the Ring of Honor six-man tag team titles. It annoys me. It annoys me that they are being defended on AEW television when we already have a set of six-man titles. So I would like for two, as the Spice Girls once said, I would like for two to become one. We had a commercial-free main event. Looking forward to this, the most random match that I have seen all year. Adam Copeland, one-on-one with Minoru Suzuki. Both men wasted no time in slugging it out. Copeland was the first to crumble, so he switched to chops. First it was forearms, then it was chops. And there was another forearm from Suzuki that again dropped Copeland. Suzuki wanted the Gotch pile driver. Copeland backdropped out of it, and Suzuki suckered him into the ropes for an arm breaker attempt, but Adam fought free. He hit a big boot. He tried for a spear. Suzuki sidestepped it into a guillotine, and he took him through the ropes to the floor, still with the hold applied. So he still has the hold cinched in, and Copeland, he took his body weight, and he charged forward towards the barricade. And both men ended up crashing through the barricade. Now, if you picture Suzuki, he's got that front face lock. They fall backwards. Suzuki was fine, but it looked like Copeland got spiked headfirst into the concrete. It looked nasty. Bryce Remsburg got to a 9 count. Both men were able to dive back into the ring to keep the match alive. Suzuki rose with a smile on his face, and more forearms from both men from their knees. As they rose to their feet, the forearms continued. Suzuki, though, switched to slaps, open-hand slaps. And eventually, they both connected at the same time. They both collapsed. Suzuki rose up first, and he lit up Copeland with open-hand strikes, tried for an armbar. Copeland spun out of it into an impaler DDT. So we got dueling chants from the crowd. Copeland wanted a spear. He ran right into a Fujiwara armbar. And Copeland got the ropes. Suzuki wanted a rear naked choke. Copeland, though, shook him off, hit a spear, only got two. and he couldn't believe it. And then as he's sitting there and he is stunned and he cannot believe that this man kicked out of the spear, Suzuki rises behind him. You can't see him. He rises up like Michael Myers. He rises up like The Undertaker. And then he reaches forward and he grabs Copeland and he sank in the rear naked choke. Copeland was fading. His face was turning purple. He looked like Brock Lesnar after 90 seconds. The arm only dropped once, though. Copeland then drove Suzuki face first into the corner and the exposed turnbuckle. The turnbuckle had been exposed by accident earlier in the match. Copeland, I think it was, pulled off the turnbuckle pad. So you knew they were going to come back to that. That was going to factor into the match in some way. Copeland then delivered a kill switch and got the pin. It was very clunky. Suzuki did not take the move right. And it's unfortunate because I was enjoying this match. This match was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, the finish looked like shit. But what are you going to do? Everything else that came before it, though, I was here for. I was into it. I was more just watching this with just a sense of disbelief that we were even getting this match. And then I saw that these two actually work really well together. And I was like, well, how about that? Who else would we like to see Copeland get in there with? You know, time is ticking away here. He doesn't have a lot of time left. And so he's thinking of different people that he could possibly work with. I mean, Tony Khan is like the genie out of the bottle for him. All he has to do is go to Tony Khan and say, what about this guy? Now, what do you think about this guy? And he knows that Tony Khan can pick up the phone and try to make it happen. So he's been able to work with his best friend. Now he's picking people like Suzuki. Hey, keep it going. Keep this open challenge going a little bit longer. See who else he can bring in. Who else could they bring in to wrestle this guy? So Christian Cage was shown backstage with a very disgusted look on his face. There's no way Christian was in the back tonight. There's no way. I swear to you, that's the exact same footage that I have seen them use before. That is stock footage of Christian Cage that they have recycled here on this show. It was literally just him with his arms crossed, looking on a monitor, looking disgusted. So then they cut back to the ring. Copeland grabs the microphone. He says he's never been hit that hard before in his life. And he offered his hand to Suzuki to show respect. Suzuki just growled at him, grunted at him, and he left the ring. And Copeland said, honestly, I would have been a little disappointed had he actually shaken my hand. So I'm glad he did. And he told Christian Cage, he looked into the hard cam and he told Christian, he's still coming for him. So I enjoyed that main event. I enjoyed the fact that it was commercial free as well. And we didn't have to watch it in a little tiny box. So that was good. I know they can't do the commercial free thing all the time, and you know, typically when they do commercial, like if they do a commercial-free first hour, like WWE does sometimes on Mondays, you're going to pay the price for it in hour two or hour three. So that's where you get the pain, right? On those long Raws, oh, the first hour is commercial-free. It's like, all right, well, that's great. You know, no commercials in the first hour. But then you know in the next 2 hours, you're just going to be flooded with commercial breaks. But here it wasn't too bad. And it was not a bad show. I enjoyed the main event. I enjoyed at least the last few minutes of the Hangman Penta match. I thought was very good. The Swerve match with Jeff Hardy, like I said, best Jeff Hardy match in years. Also very good. They did the thing with Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo to set up their future match. They set up a few things for future matches, but those were the key things on the show. But there was no real life to it through different chunks of the show. And I think it was being in that building, and I don't know what the capacity is for that building, but there were parts of the show early on where I could hear an echo in the building. So I don't know if that was simply the case of having so many empty seats, I don't know how many empty seats there were. I don't get the sense that it was a gigantic building they were in. They were having audio issues at the beginning. It cleared up after a little while. But it just sounded very, very dead in that building. Yeah, you watch these Dynamite shows over the years, and when you get those really hot episodes of Dynamite where the crowd is losing their minds, you're getting great matches, and maybe there's a great promo battle or something on the show, and you know, people are going crazy and everything, and it's a different vibe. That vibe was not there tonight. That vibe was missing. That vibe was kidnapped. It's in the trunk of a car in Mexico somewhere. I don't know, but it was not on the show tonight. So, unfortunately, a good show that was marred by, I guess, not a lot for the people in Savannah to get excited about. So, hopefully, they'll come back stronger next week. Rampage on Friday is going to have Kip Sabian, Commander, The Butcher, and Elio Del Vikingo wrestling for a shot on Collision at the international title. Jon Moxley takes on Lee Moriarty. Konosuke Takeshita will take on Christopher Daniels. And Ruby Soho takes on Anna Jay. BlissFan is saying 1,800. Yeah. AEW's lowest paid attendance ever. Well, it sure sounded like it if it was. It definitely sounded like it. It felt like it tonight. I'm one of the people who has advocated for them to run smaller buildings because you cannot run these NBA-sized arenas and only fill them up halfway. Or less. It's not even a case where if you have an NBA building that fits 20,000 people, they're getting 10. No, it's 20,000 people and they're getting 3 or 4. You cannot do that. So they absolutely need to run smaller venues. But if you're going to run smaller venues, you've got to try to pack those smaller venues. If you're running smaller venues and you're still not packing them, you have a problem. And that problem is going to have to be addressed by Tony Khan. Because he can sell 40,000 plus tickets so far, or close to 40,000 for this year's Wembley show, and they're sold out or damn near sold out for Revolution. That's going to be a big night. Sting's retirement match. That's great. Right? First $1 million gate probably ever at the Greensboro Coliseum. That's history. That's terrific. That's March 3rd. What happens that week on Dynamite? On March 5th or 6th or whatever that Wednesday is, how many people are they going to have in the building that night? And the week after that and the week after that, what about Collision? It's a definite problem. There's no doubt about it. They're running certain buildings in certain towns and they are barely able to get a decent number of people. I mean, that would be great for an independent show. We'd love to have 1,800 people or 2,100 people per show. But for AEW, running these buildings on live television, that's not good. And again, I see complaints from people online in some of these places where they're selling tickets to these shows, and they're like, I didn't even know that Dynamite was coming to town. I mean, it's not like they don't do any local promotion. I know they do. Obviously, they're not doing enough of it in some of these places. But it goes beyond just local promotion. You know, you have to be giving people something that they want to see. Now, I'm enjoying certain aspects of the show. Some aspects I don't. Some aspects I really don't give a shit about. But the fact is, it's a recurring problem that is going to have to be addressed. You got to run smaller buildings, but you got to be able to fill those smaller buildings. Otherwise, it's going to sound like shit. It's going to look like shit. It's going to feel like shit. When you watch these shows, they get very lucky sometimes. They ran that one show in Canada when they had that Canadian tour last year. And I don't remember if it was Calgary. I don't remember what province it was. It was a very small building, I believe. And they might have had about 2,000 people, 2,500 people there. But my God, you would think there were 5 or 10,000 people. That's what I mean. A crowd can help lift the show, and in some places, people are going to be more vocal. But you got to run the smaller venues. You cannot continue to run these bigger buildings if people are not buying tickets to come to the shows. You can't do that. I mean, that's the sort of thing that TNA was doing when they went on the road. And eventually, they stopped going on the road because they were losing money. But they started to go on the road many years ago, and in a lot of places, they were not doing very well. I remember one year they ran Bound for Glory at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. You know how many people fit in the Alamo Dome? I'm pretty sure it's upwards of 70,000 people. They had 7,000. They sectioned off, they curtained off a small little sliver of the Alamo Dome. And I don't remember what year it was. It might have been 2011 or 2012. But they did that for Bound for Glory. And I remember reading that going, wait a minute. They're running the Alamo Dome? And you're only running it with 7,000 people? Like, why would you do that? To be able to say that you're running the Alamo? I don't really understand the logic behind that. It just blew my mind. But yeah, no. I mean, look, it's something that can't be ignored. Can't be ignored. Collision on Saturday is going to have FTR and Daniel Garcia take on the House of Black. That is a six-man escape the cage elimination match. Bryan Danielson takes on Yuji Nagata. Orange Cassidy defends the international title against the winner of the Rampage four-way. Serena Deeb will be back in action. And Mariah May takes on Lady Frost. And Dynamite in 2 weeks, of course, has the tag team title match where Sting and Darby will challenge Ricky Starks and Big Bill. So that is what is on tap for AEW. And of course, next week, that's in 2 weeks, 1 week from tonight, Swerve and Hangman will pick the opponents for each other. So that's coming up then. All right, we're going to take the Savannah Bananas away there. Say goodbye. Say goodbye to the banana. Take a look at the Twitter poll. 55% thumbs up score for Dynamite tonight with 1,100 plus votes in so far. And we got about 45% thumbs down. So again, these Dynamite scores ain't what they used to be on some weeks. That is for sure. And that's pretty much, you know, more or less in line with what I felt tonight's show deserved. And it wasn't a bad show, but I thought last week was better. That's what I thought. But I am but one person, right? So what do I do? I've only been doing this for how many years now? All right, let's take a look at your super chats. Again, the goal tonight for Be the Booker was 400, and we're around 380. So we're lagging behind the goal. If you want to do Be the Booker, go ahead and hit that thumbs up. Let me take a look at your super chats here. It doesn't look like we have too many of them tonight. Kind of a dead night, so let's zip on through this here. Mr. GMB is back with a $2 super chat. What was the most jobber-filled Royal Rumble to you? The most jobber-filled Royal Rumble might have been that one from 2011. That was the one and only 40-man Rumble in history. I know we got some cameos in that one. Booker T was in there. Diesel was in there. They had some big names, but when you expand it out to 40, you're just, I don't, maybe jobber is a little strong of a word to use, but you're expanding it out with even more people who have no chance of winning. Thankfully, they abandoned that and they never went back to it. Ed Swoggle, is the sound echoey because attendance is so low? Well, yes. Because that, like I said, that was something I noticed. I could tell that the crowd was very small when Samoa Joe was cutting his promo, just based on the acoustics. But there was an audio issue. There was an echo on the commentary. When Joe got on commentary, it was with Shivani, Excalibur. It didn't matter who was talking. There was some kind of an echo. And I'm sitting here going, man, I just don't understand. 5 years in, this company still can't figure out their audio. I just don't understand it. Thankfully, though, they were able to get it fixed after the opening set. So it was a combination of both. We got Tuxedo T Servo. Hey, thank you for the $10 super chat, Tuxedo. I appreciate that very much. Jazz Jackrabbit says, thanks. The sound off extras today. Do you think having the Rock board of directors for TKO paves the way for a TKO Endeavor acquisition of the UFL? Not now. I do not know. Long term, who knows? But that's not anything I'm expecting in the near future. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett. Hey, Solo, I just want to say, have a safe trip and enjoy yourself. Also, I question Do you think Beretta is going to turn heel? My gut keeps telling me he is. Based on the way they've been using him lately, it feels like there's a heel turn coming. Do I care? Honestly, do I give a shit? I don't. I just don't care. But I do think there's one coming. John Sterniker. I will be at Ferg's this Saturday in Tampa. Who would win in a game of Solomon... In a game off. In a game off. Solomonster or Xavier Woods? Xavier Woods. You're going to put me in there against the guy who plays games as what? He basically plays games for a living. Right? I mean, it's not the only thing that he does. If you're going to put me up against him, I'm going to get massacred. Rodimus Prime. Copeland against Suzuki is something I thought I would never see. What kind of world are we living in? Regardless, I loved it. Rodimus also says, with the Rumble on Saturday, is it fair to say that this is the most anticipated since Royal Rumble 2001? No, I wouldn't say since 2001. I mean, I look forward to the Rumble every year. And there have been some really good Rumbles in recent years. I wouldn't say since 2001. I remember looking forward to the one in 2020 a lot. For the Brock Rumble. Arabian Knight, I see what Tony Khan is doing, bringing in New Japan talent this week for Dynamite and Collision. Probably will continue to do so for another couple of weeks. Wink, wink. You may be onto something there. Paul Carpenter, Gunther will be at the Rumble on Sunday, not Saturday. He changed the schedule. Did he? Well, nobody told me. My ticket says Saturday, so there better be a fucking show on Saturday. Or I'm not going to be very happy. Ed Swoggle, the Savannah Banana kind of looks like Chris Jericho. Boots, should we all get matching GWO tattoos? I dare you. Devlin Husband, just got to Miami for the Jericho Cruise. Hope all is well. Tony Khan needs to do something to fix attendance issues. Well, have fun. Enjoy. I have not been on a cruise since that cruise that I went on in 2020. Dick Grosso, I really enjoyed your Royal Rumble prediction stream with Denise Salcido. You guys are the duo I did not know I needed, so hopefully we get more Denise and Solomonster collaborations in the future. Yeah, my thanks to her. I popped up on her channel earlier this afternoon to talk a little Royal Rumble. I will be doing, most likely, my own separate Rumble predictions stream here on this channel. Maybe adding a little bit to it. Maybe we'll answer some questions and some other stuff. Might do that during the day. Maybe late morning on Friday. But it was good to talk to Denise earlier. It was a good stream. Glad you enjoyed it. Be calm, see clearly. If anybody says something bad about Moxley, I will find you. Jon Moxley is my favorite wrestler, and no, he doesn't bleed too much. I love Moxley. I can tell. You love Moxley like Tony Atlas loves boots. I don't mean boots from our chat. I mean actual boots. Dylan Hensley. The $20 super chat. Last Monday, Jerry Lynn visited the academy for a seminar. I learned a lot about psychology and match structure. Jerry also made his opinions clear to us about modern wrestling looking too choreographed and less like a fight. Well, more power to Jerry Lynn, because he's 100% right. Jerry Lynn is a man who knows what he's talking about. But that's very cool. Very cool that you got to sit under the learning tree for a while. Alexander Fitzgerald, I went to Dynamite in Portland in November, and I would not have known that a show would be there if I wasn't on Twitter. Marketing needs to be better. It's a definite issue. A lot of people have talked about it. I didn't even know the show was coming. I didn't see anybody on the local newscasts. I didn't see any advertising for it. It's one of the things they have to do a better job of doing. I mean, it's a must. An absolute killer if you don't have the right advertising in some of these local markets. And again, I know they do it. It's not like they don't do any of it. But clearly you have some places where they're not doing enough of it, or it's just not getting through. And Jazz Jackrabbit, 2025 will bring about an evolution to the term Netflix and chill. Wrestling nerds are going to cause a whole lot of confusion on the dating scene. Well, you're assuming that they're going to date. But Jazz, thank you. Thank you for the $3. Somebody said that the Savannah banana looks like Jericho, and I have to see now. You know what it is? I do see it. It's the bat. Jericho now walks around with a bat. So the banana has a bat. But the thing with the banana is, I don't think that the banana stays up and drinks vodka until they pass out every night. So not quite the same thing, but maybe a little bit. Maybe just a little bit. All right, we hit our goal. We are officially at 405 on the likes, which, again, they help out the stream quite a bit. So do hit that thumbs up. I appreciate it. And so let's get rid of the banana. And let's go and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
All right, let's do this. Let's not waste any time. Because Solomonster has to get some sleep. Because Solomonster is not done packing. Which I probably should be done packing by now, but I'm not. All right, here we go. Tag team Be the Booker, and what a way. We begin Be the Booker with Booker. Booker T, Stevie Ray, Harlem Heat. 10-time WCW Tag Team Champions, I believe. 10 or 11. I forget which. Harlem Heat taking on the East-West Connection. Jesse Ventura. And of course, right there, we had a Dark Side of the Ring episode on Adrian Adonis not that long ago. Was it last season, in fact, I think? Might have been last season. That was an AWA thing, the East-West Connection. Good shit. That's a solid match right there. Not that Jesse was the most dynamic in-ring performer from what I saw of him, but Adonis could work, especially before he put on all the weight. Even when he put on all the weight, he was bumping around in there like a cruiserweight. All right, women's Be the Booker. We begin with Sol Ruka, who is currently on the injured list with what else? A torn ACL. It's like a virus going around. Sol Ruka should be back in a few months, hopefully. I don't remember when she had her surgery. I don't remember what month it was. I don't recall. Actually, there was a wrestler in TNA, and I forgot who it was. She just posted the other day that she suffered a torn ACL. Sol Ruka against Jamie Hayter. Jamie Hayter. Can't wait to get her back on TV. And Sol Ruka, still very inexperienced, but what little I saw of her, she got a great finish. That finishing move, it's a little over the top as far as the setup for it, but I think it's a great looking finish. She's very athletic. You could see that she's got a lot of raw talent that they really just, you know, they haven't put all the pieces together yet, but in time they might. Put her in the ring with Jamie Hayter and let Jamie just beat the hell out of her. Let her pay her dues. There you go. There you go. She'll put her through the ropes. She'll teach her a few things. Yeah, Hayter wins that one easily. And now men's Be the Booker. Who has been fined? Look at all these fines that Bryan Danielson has been dishing at. Is that Colin? Colin has been fined by Bryan Danielson. You better pay up, too. All right, here we go. Men's Be the Booker. We begin with Doink the Clown. We had a Dark Side of the Ring episode on him, too, last season. And see, that's Matt Bourne. That's the original. That's the OG, Doink the Clown. Doink is going to be in our main event. If it's evil heel Doink. I know some people might think that's an automatic buzzer, but it's not. Evil heel Doink was great. It's just he needs the right opponent. So let's see who that opponent is going to be. Heel Doink. Against the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Look at that winged eagle. You can tell me that isn't the best looking title that company's ever had. Are you out of your mind? Look at that thing. Compare that to the shit that we have today in this company. What a beautiful belt. Where did we go wrong in WWE when it comes to title designs? How did we go from this to what we have, to giant logo belts? Ric Flair and Doink gets a bell from me. Two old pros, man. Two old pros. Ric Flair, Matt Bourne. That's a solid card right there. That's a solid card. 3 for 3. There you go. You guys got a good one tonight. Juan Ocampo. Actually, we'll start with Colin. Colin, with the $5 super chat, there might be a way you can jump up in the AEW rankings and storylines by winning a 3 or 4-way match involving other contenders. Just a thought. Well, hopefully they'll put as much thought into it as you and some others I've seen have been doing. But I just think they're just going to end up going to the wayside like they did before. I mean, look, they want to try it. There's no harm in trying it, but I'm not going to get excited about it. Juan Ocampo, thanks for taking my question for the mailbox. Could not help but laugh on your done rant. Well, I had to share that story because it's just such a great story. But that was the Girls Gone Wild segment that we did. I should clarify. The Girls Gone Wild segment where we talked about the old pay-per-view. I did not do a Girls Gone Wild segment on my show where I flashed everybody or anything like that. But yeah, in the course of doing that whole segment, I shared a great, wonderful Kevin Dunn story that is just priceless. So, always love sharing that story. But anyway, Juan, thank you very much. I appreciate it. The plumber is not available anymore because the plumber now is the plumber has his own dedicated super chat. So I'm not going to step all over that. You want to hear the plumber? It's down below in the description. But he's still around. He's still floating around. And Jake Finn, how would you feel if you were Tony Khan hearing the news of Raw on Netflix? If I'm Tony Khan hearing that news, I'm using it as a learning experience. You know, WWE is going to basically be the guinea pig when it comes to wrestling. And if things were to go well with Netflix, I think he might learn a few things from it. A few years from now, we could see AEW programming on streaming. Maybe on Max. So I think for him, if he were smart, and he is a smart guy, he's not a stupid person, I think that he's paying very close attention to what's going on. And I think that he will take away from that whatever he feels he could then take and apply with his own product that could potentially benefit AEW. Maybe that's something that they might, you know, jump into at some point down the road. But I mean, Raw, the only thing that if I'm Tony Khan, I might be concerned about is the possibility that Raw could move nights. And so if Raw were to move, let's say, to a Wednesday, I think that's unlikely, but not impossible. That is something Tony Khan needs to, in the back of his mind, be at least a little bit concerned about. Hopefully Raw will stay on Mondays, though. It wouldn't feel right if they moved it to any other night. It just would feel wrong. You know, it just wouldn't feel right. But at some point this year, you know, he needs the hope, if they sign a new deal with Warner Brothers Discovery, that there is a streaming component to it. You know, maybe they shift their pay-per-views to streaming. I don't know that they'll have a dedicated show on there. But people have been talking about this potential Max deal for 2 years now, and there's been nothing. And they're building, every year that goes by, they're building up a bigger library of content of past Dynamites and other shows, pay-per-views. So he needs to get himself a streaming deal with Warner Brothers Discovery is what he needs to do for his pay-per-views and his library of content. BB Bala coming in with a $5 says, easy. Couldn't the AEW rankings be bypassed if the champion challenges somebody? If the champion challenges someone and puts the title on the line? Yeah, I mean, theoretically. Joe was talking about a championship committee a few weeks ago when they did the Daily's Place show. What happened to that idea? 1 week we're going to have a championship committee. The next week or 2 weeks later, now we're bringing back the ranking system. So what is it? Are people working their way up the rankings to contend for titles? Or do we just have a committee that's going to make a decision about who deserves a shot? Apparently they've already abandoned the idea. Which probably shows you how quickly they made that decision. Yeah, there will be no SmackDown stream on Friday night. I did mention that the other day. There will be no SmackDown stream on Friday night. I am planning on probably going live earlier in the day, like during the daytime, to do a quick, like a Rumble prediction stream. SmackDown, though, I will not be around for. Devin from New Jersey says, Solo, the movie plot. Solo wakes up in another life where he was never a wrestling podcaster, but still talks like Vince Russo. Kevin Finnerty inspired. Kevin Finnerty. It's the test stream. Just talked about that a few weeks ago. The test stream episode of The Sopranos. Now, I mean, if I had to walk around sounding like Vince Russo, I would just, you know, throw myself into a wood chipper. That's like the seventh circle of hell. I can't tolerate that. Imagine hearing that, just hearing that voice. Bro, and all the bros, too. Imagine hearing that every single day of your life, morning, noon, and night. My God, sounds like a horror movie plot. What about Rampage? Yeah, no, I will not be watching Rampage on Friday. Very funny. Nice try. It's wrestling, bro. We're talking about wrestling. It's only wrestling, bro. All right. So again, no SmackDown stream on Friday. Rumble predictions earlier that day. I will be at the Rumble, which is why I'm going down to Florida. I will be at the Royal Rumble, the Tropicana Field on Saturday. So look for me. I'm sure you'll find me in a sea of 50,000 people. I am going to be doing a Royal Rumble recap. It will either be very late that night when I get out of the stadium, or it'll be the next day. I will keep you guys posted on Twitter about that, but there will be a Rumble review at some point this week, and that will be the podcast. I've already done two podcasts this week. I'm not doing a sound-off proper, sound-off on Sunday. There will be no sound-off, only the Rumble review. I come back on Monday. I'll be back in time for Raw Monday night. And we'll cover the post-Rumble episode of Raw, which has a tag team title match with DIY challenging the Judgment Day for the Undisputed Tag Team titles. And, of course, we will find out. We'll find out who is going on to WrestleMania to challenge for the title of their choosing. It's going to be a big weekend, going to be a fun weekend. We usually do very well for the Royal Rumble, so even if I am going on a little bit late or a day late, whatever it is, I hope you guys will make time to join me live. I expect to see you back here in the chat. It's going to be a fun weekend. Hopefully it'll be a very good Rumble. Dr. Bropio says, bring a Solo Monster sign, LOL. What an asshole I would be if I brought a sign for myself. I'm not going to do that. But you know what would be cool? If you're going to the Rumble, if somebody is going to the Rumble who's listening to this, this or watching this. And they bring a Sala Monster sign, and I see you. I will have to come over to you and say hello and take a picture with you. I want to see the Sound Off signs in the stadium, not holding one. How lame would that be, by the way? I show up with my own sign. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. All right, be well. Stacey, you guys have the worst ideas. That's why you listen to me. My ideas are so much better. You guys, these ideas, I don't know where you get these ideas from. That's why you need me to set you straight. All right, be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a good night. And I will see you along the way for more content coming up this weekend. Until then, take care, guys.